Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, some of the great rivalries in the history of basketball. Another emerged this week, Devin Booker and the Raptor. Welcome back to First Stop, Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. We welcome in our good buddy, our Butabi brother, Josh Lewenberg, to the show. Hey, Jaylee, what's up, buddy?
Sup, guys?
What was the experience like? And certainly there's been a lot that has transpired since the game between the Raptors and the Suns, seeing Devin Booker just feverishly wave off the Raptor and get him moved as the only fan in attendance. You were in the arena, Jaylee. Reflect back on that experience for us.
It was a great game, as if there was nothing else going on that night. But yeah, the highlight was Booker versus the Raptor. The Raptor in general, because his presence loomed large, in some cases literally, as he was walking around an empty arena in the 20-foot inflatable Raptor costume. And Booker, for some reason, didn't seem to be too bothered by the giant Raptor. But yeah, he didn't really seem to like regular-size Raptor, but nearly missed the free throw, too. But good on the Raptor, right? He's doing important work for this city right now in lieu of fans being in the arena. No streaming fans, no Drake there to rile up the opposing team's players also. So, yeah, it's on the Raptors. He's carrying a big workload right now, and he's delivering. The whole thing, I was confused by it, I'm not going to lie, because like mascots are doing that in full arenas every night, right? So, like, is Booker under the assumption that because the Raptors can't have fans in the arena, they can't have any kind of home court advantage, they can't have their mascots, or should Herbie not be introducing the starting lineups or doing his reads also? I'm confused by that, too, right? Because I'm not sure how much you're able to hear on the broadcast, but Herbie's doing his regular reads where he's saying, "Hey fans, make sure to keep your masks on," or "Hey fans, make sure to vote for Fred VanVleet." And like, there's literally five of us in the media sitting there on media row, and then Masai Ujiri and like a few of his front office lieutenants are sitting there with him. But outside of that, like, this is very much an empty arena. At one point, over the first few games, there was like a section of friends and family, of players' friends and family, in there, but that no longer really happening either. So this is an empty arena, aside from the Raptor running around doing his shenanigans and a few scattered people here and there. So yeah, it's I'm not sure how necessary all of the antics are, but I love that the Raptor is still doing it. And yeah, I mean, it would feel weird if he wasn't, right?
Right. And, you know, who's to say that maybe Chris Paul didn't slip the Raptor a nice $100 bill and say, "Hey, we do this at our practices to get to him. Why not do it during the game and try to get to him?" Because that's what Devin Booker touched on after the game, saying that, "Oh, these guys joke around when you practice. And, you know, I hate it when they do it then. And I just hated when the Raptor did it at that time of the game." But hey, sore loser move by Devin Booker, if you ask me. Maybe it was the Raptor giving the Raptors a nice send-off, because they just completed an impressive homestand. They went out with a fight against the Phoenix Suns. It was an unbelievable game to watch, the defensively, the grind, the battle. But they take their talents on the road right now, starting tomorrow night in Detroit, in Milwaukee, and then a visit to Miami, where they revisit with Kyle Lowry. But do you like where the Raptors stand right now, considering the stretch that they've put off going onto the road, maybe getting used to playing with fans in the stands again and building off the success that they just were able to have?
Yeah, I mean, the game against Phoenix was an important one, I think. It was a bizarre six-game winning streak, right? Like, I mean, I give them more credit for it than I think most people do, and I think you should give them credit. Yeah, I mean, you could look at each game, and the Raptors, all six of those wins came against teams that were missing their best player. In some cases, like the Utah game, they were missing multiple key players. But at the same time, like, you've got to take advantage of those opportunities when they present themselves. The Raptors did that. And I think they did something that they haven't done a great job of for the most part this year, and that's beating bad teams, right? Like Chris Boucher mentioned that the other day, that this has been an inconsistent team. They've lost some games that they should absolutely win. You got Detroit coming up tomorrow. The Raptors already lost the game to Dwayne Casey and the Pistons this year. They lost that game to OKC. There's a bunch of them that really stand out. Boucher was saying the other day, like, they've got to play the way they did against Phoenix and against some of these other good teams that they've faced recently, but they've got to do that against the bad teams. The fact that they were able to do that over a six-game stretch in which they looked to really start to build some chemistry and some momentum, that was encouraging to me. But at the same time, I think, like, naturally there are going to be questions after a stretch like that. How real is it? How legit is it? Is it sustainable? Can they do it against the better teams? And even in defeat against Phoenix, I think it was encouraging, and I think it was proof that this team really is onto something, that there is something here. They are building something. They are developing. And it's not just against depleted teams or against bad teams. They didn't have two of their key starters with Barnes and with Gary Trent out. They didn't shoot the ball especially well either, but they played really hard. It certainly wasn't for a lack of effort. The 22 offensive rebounds, just inspired performances from guys like Boucher and Justin Champagny in the fourth quarter, starting to see some of those depth pieces really step up and settle into their roles coming off the bench. So to answer your question, Carlo, I do. I see where the Raptors are headed. Now that we're getting very close to the halfway point of the season, I see what they're building towards. I still think they've got to figure some things out defensively. But I do like where this team is at right now, and I do think there are some big tests coming up as well with a tough road trip coming up and some good teams here coming up on the schedule.
Our guest is Josh Lundberg, TSN's Raptors reporter. He and Nikki Reyes will have the Raptors beat for you in about 35 minutes' time right here on TSN 1050. Josh, there was a report yesterday, maybe just a tweet. Is a tweet a report? I don't know. In any case, that the Los Angeles Lakers are interested in the services of Gary Trent Jr. Should surprise no one. I mean, the Lakers need players desperately. They're 21-21, and Gary Trent would be a great fit on any NBA roster. What do you think the likelihood is of the Raptors making a trade? And I would say if they traded Trent, that would be a sizable deal for sure. The return would be significant considering how Trent has performed, his youth, and everything associated with the way he's played this year. But what do you make of the likelihood that a guy like Trent or anyone could be moved, at least from the rotation that the Raptors currently have intact?
Well, I wonder what GM LeBron James is willing to give up for Gary Trent.
Talen Horton Tucker, perhaps? No, he couldn't possibly part with him.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, they were interested in Kyle Lowry last year, too, but they wanted him for free. So, yeah, I'm sure they're interested in a lot of guys. The question is, what are they willing to give up? I mean, we're less than a month away from the trade deadline now, but from talking to people around the league and even some people around the team, the sense that I get is that the Raptors are absolutely planning on operating as a buyer at the trade deadline this season, that they're looking to add rather than to subtract. It's just a question, as always, is what is out there. I think we're still probably a couple weeks away from talks really starting to heat up. Like, I don't think there's much discussion going on between teams right now, and I know certainly that's the case for the Raptors. It's more right now of an evaluation period, deciding ultimately, as I said, what do you want to operate as, a buyer or a seller? I think in some cases that's still unfolding around the league with teams that are sort of on the fence or on the cusp. They're trying to figure out where they're at and what they need, and I think the Raptors are kind of doing the same. In this case, this year, there are some big dominoes out there. We know about them with Ben Simmons in Philadelphia, probably Jeremy Grant in Detroit, maybe the Indiana bigs as well, and who knows, there might be a few other big names out there. I think it's one of those cases where once one of those guys is moved, perhaps the floodgates are open and all of a sudden there's a lot more activity. In terms of the Raptors and what they might be interested in, like I think there are a number of areas that you can look at. They could use another shooter or scorer on the wing, and I think we saw that the other night in the game against Phoenix. Depending on how they feel about the experiment with Siakam and Barnes as the backup point guard, and I think for the most part it's gone pretty well, but maybe they could look to bring in a more traditional backup point guard. And then, of course, there's the longstanding need at the center position. That's probably still the biggest need, the biggest area of need for the Raptors right now. But I think when you look at where they're at, we just talked about it, like there's an opportunity here for them in a wide-open Eastern Conference. I think it's probably been pretty tough to evaluate where they're at and what they need just because they haven't had their best players on the court together at the same time very much this year. But they've got to be encouraged by what they've seen so far, no?
Oh, absolutely, especially when they're fully intact, right? I mean, I think it's a lot of it with Scottie Barnes and Gary Trent being out against Phoenix. You hope those two are back for a 3-games-in-4-night schedule. It starts tomorrow night in Detroit. They play Milwaukee on Saturday and Monday, J. Lou, the Miami Heat. So Freddie All-Star going up against his boy Kyle Lowry. And Miami's looking really good. They've had a lot of injuries, but that Omer Yurtseven fellow who's averaging like 15 rebounds a game in Bam Adebayo's place. Made a lot of money betting the over on his rebounds. Okay, I'm a huge degenerate. I got to stop giving that away to our audience. Josh, thank you for doing this. We appreciate it, my friend. We'll be listening at 10 a.m.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Josh is probably like, what is this guy talking about? Omer Yurtseven? But you check out that man's rebounding numbers. Unstoppable force in the paint. Huge fan.
What's his name?
Omer's. Omer Yurtseven. I've been betting the over on Omer Yurtseven's rebounds for weeks now. And last night he had a bad game. Admittedly, it was a tough matchup. I think they played Atlanta last night, Miami. They just blew him out.
They did, yeah.
But, yeah, it was a tough matchup for Omer. But, yeah, he's been great. Been betting the over on Tyler Hero points, Duncan Robinson threes. The Miami Heat have been a gold mine for yours truly. And I was just reading about the Kyrie Irving situation. And apparently last night on ESPN, I think it was Scott Van Pelt's show, Adrian Wojnarowski said the following: there is real optimism within the Brooklyn Nets organization that Kyrie Irving will become a full-time player at some point this season. So, listen, if Brooklyn has Kyrie, Harden, and Durant all together throughout the course of a playoff, like, no one's beating them. Like, that's arguably the greatest offensive team ever. Well, I don't want to cancel the season. Golden State and Brooklyn would be a hell of an NBA final.
Well, that's what I mean. Cancel the season. Go right to the finals.
Well, go right to the finals. I mean, that would be – I can't possibly imagine anything more fun and exciting if you're a fan of sports than seeing Durant, Harden, Kyrie against Klay, Steph, Draymond. I mean, right. It'd just be ridiculous. The amount of number of Hall of Famers.
That's the dream matchup that the NBA wants for their finals, not Milwaukee versus Phoenix where – you know, you had Giannis, and then you had Chris Paul, and you had Devin Booker, but you know, not the star-studded names that the NBA would definitely hope for at that time of year.
Well, and I mean, I think when we bring it back to the Kyrie situation, should he get vaccinated? Would I prefer he gets vaccinated? Of course.
Yes,
but
100%.
I mean, I would also argue that Kyrie Irving is a much lower risk of spreading the coronavirus to the general public than many, many fans in that building who, you know, we've heard the Pfizer and Moderna and the CDC come out and say that, you know, you have two shots, it's very limited protection. And those two shots happened months ago. Kyrie Irving gets tested for COVID every single day, and he just recovered from it. So who poses the real risk? That mandate is completely outdated in New York and should be revised, if you ask me. It wouldn't surprise me if it is revised, and maybe that's where that optimism stems from the Brooklyn Nets. We'll talk to Bob Weeks, our TSN golf analyst from Golf Talk Canada. We got to get some picks for him from him for the Sony Open. I'm eyeing two guys, Abraham Anser and Mark Leishman. We'll get Bob Weeks' takes on that, and we'll hear his thoughts on Corey Connors, who's one of the favorites, and that Netflix special on the PGA Tour. Can't wait for that, and we'll hear what kind of inside info Bob has for us. He joins us next on First Up. Nice.
What a performance from Cameron Smith at the Century Tournament of Champions last week. Just put on a clinic of birdies and eagles and low scores. Sneaking out the W. Some fish. Yeah, sneaking out the W over world number one, John Rahm. He truly put on a clinic. He will be back in the field this week. The Sony Open in Hawaii, not surprisingly, the betting favorite at the moment. And a man who's back on our show for the first time in far too long from Golf Talk Canada, our golf analyst here at TSN. It is Bob Weeks. How are you, Bob?
I'm great, boys. How are you? Happy New Year.
We're good.
We're cold, Bob. Yeah,
it is too cold. Actually, on the subject of the cold, I'm sure you and Zucchino and Adam Scully, the Golf Talk Canada team, you have some kind of group chat. How many times has Zucchino sent you pictures and videos of his delightful time in Hawaii so far?
Far too many. In fact, last week, just to rub it in, you know, we do our weekly edge picks. Last week, to rub it in, he did it like standing on the fairway wearing sunglasses.
That is a jerk move. Hey, if he's got a chance to take advantage of it, I'm pretty sure you would too, right, Bob?
I jump all over it. You know, I think I have covered every PGA Tour event of note, except I've never been to the Hawaii event, so I envy Mark.
Yes. Come on, TSN. What are we doing here? We gotta get the whole gamut of PGA Tour events for Bob Weeks. So we mentioned Cameron Smith, the betting favorite at the Sony Open. You have guys like Webb Simpson, Sung J.M., Hideki Matsuyama at the top of the list as well. But also at the top of the list is Corey Connors, who's looking for his second PGA Tour victory. What do you make of his chances this week, Bob, considering, you know, this course could set up well for him?
Yeah, I think as opposed to last week where you could sort of land a fighter jet on the fairways, they were pretty big, but this one's more of a ball striker, so you got to kind of put it in the fairway and put it on the greens. Greens are a little smaller, fairways a little tighter, and that plays right into Corey Connors' strengths. You know, he is a supreme off that tee and into the greens. He's, I think, inside the top. I think he was fourth in fairways in regulation and 13th in greens in reg last year. The putter, of course, will always decide what happens to him. But, you know, he's really made some steps up. He's worked hard on that. He's worked hard on his wedge game. Those are the two weak points that he has. And you can see the improvement. It's you know, he went from 181st to 112th 2 years ago to last year in terms of putting. And he's kind of moving in the right direction. So, I like his chances, and I it's interesting. I had a talk with Webb Simpson in late November, and I said to him, "What, you know, he knows Corey well. They play some practice rounds together through their RBC connection." And I said, "Well, you know, what does Corey need to do to take that next step? Because he's basically inside the top 40 in the world. He's a class player." And he said, "He just needs to get into Sunday afternoon a lot more and just feel what it's like, get comfortable when you're in the hunt." And I think that's something that that Corey knows and Corey wants to do. So maybe that'll start this week.
Bob, we saw the season kick off last week at the Century Tournament of Champions, and you know, Cameron Smith winning. John Rahm put up a very impressive performance as well, losing by one stroke. But when it comes to John Rahm, what expectations do you have for him this season? Because here's a guy who clearly started to click late into the golf season last year, and you know, it looks like he's carrying the momentum right into this year. Is this a guy we could see win multiple tournaments this year?
I don't see any slowdown in John Rahm's game right now. I mean, he doesn't really seem to have a weak point. I mean, you know, yes, he finished second, but what was he, 33 or 34 under par? I mean, that's ridiculous. I like the fact that he's still hungry. I like the fact that he is still kind of focused on major championships and wants to get himself into that level a little bit more after the U.S. Open win last year. He's you know, you look at where he's finished, not so much the wins, but look where the top tens that he's had in the last year or so. It's just kind of almost Nicklaus-like. You know, he's always up around the top of the leaderboard, and he's going to be tough to knock off from the number one spot if he keeps playing like that. And we'll see. You know, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of hard work. You see guys like Dustin Johnson, who held on for a while and now has kind of dropped off. And I always remember Nick Price telling me, he says, the only thing tougher than getting to number one in the world ranking is staying at number one in the world ranking. So, but I don't think John Rahm's going anywhere for a while.
Bob Weeks from Golf Talk Canada, our TSN golf analyst, is our guest here on First Up. Big news in the golf world yesterday, Bob, had to do with Netflix and the PGA Tour, the big kind of release of the news about who would partake in this upcoming Netflix documentary series. And I don't know if you've seen the Drive to Survive, the F1 series, but producers do an absolutely remarkable job bringing you compelling content behind the scenes. To say I'm excited for the PGA Tour version would be a massive understatement. What intrigues you most about the potential of this idea, Bob?
There was one line in the release that I loved that to me is going to be the key, and that is that the PGA Tour is not going to, you know, restrict or oversee the content. So there's no restrictions on what the golfers can do or what they can say, and I think the golfers are smart enough to know that they're not going to, you know, put themselves in any kind of crazy danger. But I think that, to me, is great, because that's what made Drive to Survive so good. It was that you really heard and really got to know who these guys were. And you look at, I mean, Formula One, I never watched Formula One before that, I got to be honest. And now I'm just a hardcore fan. And if you look at some of the players who are on the list of guys who are going to talk, there's a really good mix. I know a lot of people wanted to see Bryson on there, but if you look at, you know, you look at some of the guys who are in there, like a Tommy Fleetwood, if you don't know him, he's great. Harry Higgs, we know a little bit about him. Max Homa, I mean, some of these guys are really going to drive, I think, the entertainment value. And you'll get some good stuff out of guys like Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Bubba Watson. But I think they've got a really good mix of players out there, and I'm more than excited to kind of see this thing like you are.
Well, Bob, I'm glad you brought up how, you know, intent you are now in Formula One because of that series. And honestly, if you look at the impact that series has had just on the Formula One world with their audience, there's been a massive change in the audience that watches Formula One right now, because people understand the life of a Formula One player. Do you think and expect that golf is hoping for the same sort of reaction here? And we're seeing, you know, a new generation of golfers come and share their interest in the game of golf. But do you think that they hope for more people to start trending towards the game of golf once they start learning more about the sport and the livelihoods of some of the players we're going to get a firsthand look at?
I think there's two sides to it. I think there's the participation fact, whether this will actually drive people to go out and play golf more. I think the PGA Tour's big aim is to try and get people to watch golf a lot more, get those ratings up. I mean, they're signing new broadcast deals. They're allowing, for the first time last year, we're starting to see legalized betting and wagering and on golf now. So all those things are kind of catching up to speed with a lot of other sports. But I think this is more to try and peel back the layers on who these guys are, because you don't really hear or see a lot of these guys. Mm-hmm. You know, you see them for little clips after they're around. You don't get to know them. I think some guys have done a really good job on social media. Max Homa is a great one. Joel Damon's another great one. Guys like that who kind of really have fun with it and aren't afraid to kind of expose who they are. And I think that, to me, is what's going to drive this series and potentially bring a lot more fans into it. And you might have a lot more people who love Harry Higgs, who didn't even know who he was a year ago. So that's the kind of thing that I think you'll see.
Overdrive turned him into a celebrity, didn't they?
Exactly. Bob, I speak for all of us. We don't need more people playing golf. The competition for tee times is already...
Yeah, we need more golf courses.
We need more golf courses? That's right. I know they're talking about like converting. Why don't you tell... Actually, I did see you were tweeting about this. Don Valley, some of the Toronto public municipal courses. There was some kind of meeting recently about their future. And that's obviously so important for so many people in the city who love golf and have access to those courses. What's the latest on that?
So there was a committee meeting, the Infrastructure and Economic Committee of Toronto City Council, which looks after the golf courses. They had commissioned a report on the 5 golf courses and what should be done with them. And the report came back with I would say, generally positive sentiments. The only thing that was kind of controversial was part of it was to take Dantonia Park and turned it into a 9-hole course rather than an 18-hole course. Hmm. And so there were a lot of people who were allowed to speak at this meeting. I was one of them. And you heard from both sides. There were some environmental proponents who wanted to turn these back into just green space, or people who wanted to link, you know, bike paths so they go through and they don't have to deviate off because of a golf course. And at the end of it, though, there were so many passionate people on this call, and not people like me and Lorne Rubenstein, you know, Hall of Famers, it was more like the guy who said he lives in subsidized housing and he takes the bus to play at Scarlet Woods.
Yep.
Or a woman who said, I go to Dentonia Park, and during the pandemic, I play in this ladies' league, and I don't know what I would have done without this league. So in a good way, what ended up happening was this committee put the recommendation forward to Toronto City Council for a final vote. And the courses, the Dentonia clause was removed, so it's going to stay at 18, or at least they're recommending it is. And they're recommending that they spend a little money on these golf courses and try and fix them up. 195,000 rounds played on the five courses last year, guys. So that shows you just how much enthusiasm there is for golf at these city courses right now, and certainly during the pandemic.
For sure. And listen, we're fortunate enough to all be members at golf courses, but there are so many people out there who aren't or don't have the same accessibility to golf that we do, and they use these city courses as their outlets, not only to play the game they enjoy, but the mental health aspect, I think, is massive, and the physical health, walking the courses and everything like that, to understate how important these are for the city, for the people who live here. I mean, I think would be doing everyone a disservice. So I'm really glad that that is the case, Bob.
And there's a happy medium there. You know, they're gonna open these courses up like in the winter right now. They've got paths where people can go and walk and cross country ski and snowshoe around on these courses. So let's not make it all just about golf. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you can open it up and you can share the space. But hey, I got my start in this business as a 15-year-old working in the back shop at Scarlet Woods. So I have a real special place for me. For public course. I know Mark Sacchino did the same thing. I know Lauren Rubenstein did the same thing. So good memories from my days at Scarlet Woods.
First time I broke 90 at Don Valley, so some lateral hazards, of course.
I lost the ball.
I'll just drop it here. It's all good. No worries about that. Bob, thank you for doing this. Why don't you give us your number one pick? If you were to advise our audience to bet on one player at the Sony Open, who would it be and why?
I'm going with Webb Simpson. He's 11 for 11 and making the cut at this tournament. His last three starts, he's finished fourth, third, and fourth.
There you go. I mean, can't beat that. I'm sure Corey Connors is listening. Won't be impressed he didn't pick him, but in any case, maybe a sprinkle on Corey Connors as well. You can make an added.
Hey, new year, new season. Let's go Canada in the golf.
Yes, let's go, boys.
Yes, sir. All right, Bob, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks, guys. Have a good morning.
See you, Bobby.
Thank you, too. That's Bob Weeks from TSN, of course, one of the hosts of Golf Talk Canada, alongside Mark Sacchino and Adam Scully. We'll be back to wrap things up on a jam-packed edition of First Up on this Thursday morning, right after this. What a 4 hours it's been as we wrap things up on First Up. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. We've learned that Carl Vemelka, is that his name? I can't even remember now. I've said
Vemelka.
It so many times.
Yes.
Vemelka, the goaltender, at least last night for the Arizona Coyotes, in spite of poor performance, at least as far as goal scoring in front of him, he's been pretty good this year. I see it's only he and Jamie McLennan who have suffered the least support as far as the team in front of him. Noodles, when he was part of the expansion Minnesota Wild, endured a very similar situation as Mr. Vemelka did, or has, with the Arizona Coyotes, but picked up the W last night, as I'm sure Noodles carried the Wild to many Ws back in the day. Vemelka carried Arizona to the W last night, and a 2-1 win for Arizona. Austin Matthews did score his ninth consecutive game with a goal on the road, a new franchise record for Mr. Matthews, and as John Tavares said post-game, there's going to be a lot of records that Austin Matthews will hold for the Toronto Maple Leafs when it's all said and done. And by the way, I don't even think we talked about this. Like, the crowd in Arizona was just terrible last night. I mean, Austin Matthews, the chosen one, returns home. The building's like half full. It's cavernous. I almost think the empty Scotiabank Arena is a preferable place to watch
here.
A hockey game than Glendale, Arizona. But if you're worried about Austin Matthews leaving Toronto, watch that game. And, yeah, his parents were in the stands and all that fun stuff, but he ain't leaving Toronto. He's with the Leafs for the long run.
It'll be quite the scenario that pops up because it was mentioned in the middle of the broadcast that Clayton Keller is living at Austin Matthews' house during the season. 7,500 square feet. So you got to think this guy lives in a pad.
That seems small.
In Arizona.
He makes 12.5 a year? Like,
And, you know, when this situation presents itself as he gets older, does he want to jump on flights every year? Or does he want to live in his same house every year? And we don't even know if the team's going to be there once his contract's up, well, because they don't even have an arena to play in. So, but hey, that's the problem with Arizona. It's not Arizona. It's the location of the rink. It's in Glendale. It's a 45-minute drive from where most people live. And in the middle of the week, yeah, okay, you've got your hometown boy coming home, but people still don't want to make the try. One, because of the travel, but two, because the team's abysmal. Like they
really
Arizona
are.
Arizona they Coyotes really are nothing to be excited about. And you know, GM Bill Armstrong is, I think, doing a pretty good job right now accumulating assets. Like, I don't know if you heard Tyson Nash on Overdrive Asher yesterday. He was pretty. It was pretty comical. But he mentioned that, you know, Bill Armstrong is doing a good job accumulating assets, and they've got a hit on these assets so that 2-3 years from now, these guys are ready to go. And that remains to be seen if it'll happen or not.
It does indeed. And we'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Thanks to 20 Fingers. Thanks to Arad. And I'm pumped for tomorrow morning's show, the NFL playoffs. Oh,
one
man,
day closer.
We got to get our picks together. Maybe we'll do that live on the air because we're in a couple of pools together. And, you know, they're lucrative for the winner. So we got to take those down and then celebrate with some cold MGDs. So he's Carlo Colaiacovo. I'm Aaron Karolnik. All that fun stuff coming your way tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
Ciao.